Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller here with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You probably or may have already harvested the last of your vegetables. You know, we are still eating tomatoes.
Is that fantastic?
Yeah, it's been really warm, hasn't it?
Yeah. Those voices you hear are coming from a couple of guests who we have with us today, Liz Freemuth. Who is a provider of concierge horticultural services through her business. Her business is The Garden Hole. And Brian Huddleston. Brian is director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at the UW-Madison. And, of course, when they come by, we talk about things like cleanup, and we talk a lot about diseases of plants. And certainly, we look forward to your questions when you call us. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And I hope you will do that. And Liz, Brian, welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning. Yet. Good morning. Good morning.
Why is, fall cleanup is important for disease management, is it not?
It is. Yeah.
Definitely. Lots of disease-causing organisms survive in old plant debris, and so if you can remove that from your yard, you can get a lot of benefit for disease control next year. So definitely I've been seeing a lot of tar spot out there on Norway maples, and that's that disease with the big black spots on the leaves. If you can rake up as many of those as possible, you're less likely to have a serious problem with that next year. Won't totally take care of the problem, but it'll be a big help.
Yeah, break the cycle.
Yeah.
Now is an excellent time to do it. And even waiting a little bit, because all of us are tired right now, at least I am, and so we need a bit of a break. Just don't wait until the snow falls to try and get your leaves up off the ground.
Yeah, that's why I have all the tar spot in my yard, because one fall I thought I got lazy and didn't do my fall cleanup. And I thought I'll do it in the spring. And then I didn't do it in the spring. And I had a big problem. Of course, I like diseases. So it became an educational teaching garden at my home.
But tar spots, not going to kill him.
No, it's a cosmetic disease, but people get very excited about it because it's very visual, and you tend to get a lot of spots on the leaves.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that aren't visual that can do a lot more damage. So it's a good indicator if you're seeing something. There are things out there you're not seeing. So it's a good reminder.
What about anything we should think about for keeping diseases at bay for next year? Is the cleanup sounds like the main one.
Certainly, if you're vegetable gardening, rotation is very important. Mm-hmm. We talk about that. People oftentimes have problems with leaf blights on tomatoes, and one of the recommendations there is make sure you're trying to move your vegetables to different areas in your garden every year. Farmers have used this technique for years and years to manage certain types of diseases, and you can get some benefit in a home garden doing that as well.
Yeah, then there's an awful lot of cultural controls that we tend to forget about, that sometimes the simplest things can help us out an awful lot. Right. We're looking at plenty of moisture, and there is that magic place, always that don't flood the things, but that magic level of moisture, especially right now where the plants may be hungry in their systems to get enough stored for over winter. So make sure that you get plenty of water and get the turf up from out from underneath the trees and the shrubs. Things like that are going to suck the moisture out of the top layers of the soil. So now you can actually do some of that stuff too and get yourself ready. And pruning as we move into winter, that is an excellent cultural thing to help increase airflow, to get rid of the diseased tissue that's there. And, so there's all those things that we kind of look at as, can we spray it? Well, there's many things that you can do you don't have to spray.
Yeah, I usually use fungicide recommendations as a last resort on most things. I think your comment about making sure, particularly conifers, are getting plenty of water into the fall.
Absolutely, yeah.
They can dry out very easily over the wintertime if they don't have enough internally stored water.
And I did see an awful lot of stress, root stress, on the evergreens this year, and it shows up in some odd kind of symptoms on the needles. And so you do want to make sure that they get plenty of moisture this fall.
We have callers online. By the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Kathy in Random Lake, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks so much for taking my call. My husband and I have a raised flower bed, or garden vegetable bed, I should say. And when I say raised, I mean it's up off the ground. It's got a stainless steel base to it. And we put potting mix in just for the best soil. How do I prepare that? Now, I pulled all the plants out and got all the stuff out of it. But how do I prepare that then for the winter?
Are you talking a perennial bed or an annual bed?
An annual bed. We put our vegetables in it.
Okay. Really, the only thing you need to do is make sure you've got that debris cleaned up. And if you'd like to add some compost to it, maybe even some kind of well-mutilated mulch of some kind in there to really get some good organic matter working in that raised bed before it freezes solid, that's really all you need to do.
Yeah, I would tend to turn the soil a little bit so that if you haven't been able to totally remove all of those old vegetable materials, that you kind of bury what's left there, and that will promote rotting of that material. And that's another way to kind of eliminate disease-causing organisms from leftover plant tissue. Yep.
And I would say if you had potting soil in that bed, it is very light, and so adding anything to it as you're turning it is going to give that soil some body and good nutrients for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Kath.
Can I ask one more question?
Okay.
Because it is raised and because it is a stainless steel, my concern is, like a swimming pool, as that freezes, it's going to expand and so forth. When that soil freezes, and it does have a drain on the bottom, so that, you know, any excess moisture does come out. But would I have to do anything other than just compost it and those types of things? Anything to keep it from busting out of its, the soil busting out?
How big is this, and is it circular or is it square?
It's rectangular. It's about 10 feet long by about 16 or 18 inches deep.
And what are the corners constructed of?
Again, it's a stainless steel base within the wooden structure. So it's a stainless steel base that is formed.
Just the base is stainless?
The internal part of it, and then it's got the wood box around it.
So it's kind of like a stainless steel pan with a box frame, with a wood frame around it?
Yeah.
Okay. If it's stainless steel and there aren't really much for seams on it, I don't think you're going to have to worry about it. As long as it has a drain and you're not watering it heavily right before it freezes solid, I don't think you're going to have to worry about that, as long as this is something that was designed for temperatures this far north. If it was designed for temperatures this far north, then it should be perfectly sturdy. And I really am, you know, letting my brain kind of wander about, and I don't recall anybody saying anything about a stainless raised bed that they had issues with. If the corners were constructed so that they were slightly loose, then if there was a lot of moisture and it did expand, you might have some issues. But if it's regular moisture in the soil, I don't think you're going to have to be concerned about it at all.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Kathy. Appreciate it. Al in Tomahawk, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you.
What's on your mind?
Okay, I have a question about tomato plants.
Okay.
And every year we plant tomatoes in our garden. In the last couple of years, they seem to... they do well at first, and then they develop a blight on the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves die, and I've tried different fungicides and so forth, and nothing seems to help with that. So that's my question. I don't know. We've tried planting them in different areas of the garden, so I don't know.
Yeah, is this a blight when you see the symptoms? Does it start at the bottom of the plant and work its way up from the bottom up?
Yes, it does, from the bottom up.
Yeah, it's one of the common tomato blights. It's most likely either one called early blight or one called septorial leaf spot. These are very common in home gardens. We talked about the basic things I tell folks with these particular diseases are good fall cleanup, which we've already discussed. When you go in next year, try to move your tomatoes to a new location in your garden, which you've mentioned you've been trying to do. The other thing is to space the plants as far apart as you possibly can. Best case is that when the plants are full size, there's no overlap in foliage on adjacent plants.
Okay.
As the plants get larger, you may want to prune out some of the branches in order to basically allow better airflow. And you, what you want to do is, if the plants get wet, you want them to dry as quickly as possible, because these fungi that cause these diseases really like wet leaf surfaces. The other thing you should do when you plant those plants is put down a thin layer of mulch underneath the tomato plants, about an inch. And one of the commercial mulches would be fine, shredded newspaper. Just what you need is a physical barrier. I also recommend going back where you had tomatoes last year and mulching over that area as well. What you're trying to do is, as diligent as you are in removing that old tomato debris from last year, you're going to leave little bits of it behind. And you want a covering over that so that if the fungus is still there and generating spores, those spores don't get away from that leaf material in the soil to your plants. And then if you start to see the disease, I would prune off those lower leaves. Again, that's going to remove a source of additional spores and also open the canopy for better airflow. How are you watering your plants?
Usually just with a hose.
Okay. Yeah.
Try to spray them at the base.
Okay, yeah. I would get a soaker hose. Definitely try to keep as much moisture when you're watering off of the leaves as possible. So a soaker hose or a drip hose is a good way to apply that. There are also certain resistant varieties, but usually those varieties are not as tasty as some of the more susceptible varieties. So you can certainly try those, but they may not have the flavor that you want. Mm-hmm. And then finally, if you're absolutely desperate, there are fungicides. It sounds like you've been trying those. The real issue with the fungicides is you have to get those on before you see any symptoms. And you need to have good, even coverage over top surfaces of leaves, bottom surfaces of leaves, the stems, in order to get good control.
There you go. Good luck.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks
You're
a lot
welcome.
For calling. Appreciate it. Eric on Facebook sent us a note. I planted leeks from seed this year for the first time. They didn't seem to be very big yet. I'm wondering if I can overwinter them in the garden by mulching them heavily with leaves.
I would even say leaves and then pile dirt or compost up over the top, as long as it's not hot compost, because you don't want to heat it up over winter. But give it a whirl. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? But I would bury them pretty deeply.
I've actually had them come back in the spring, you know, some that you just sort of leave in the garden, you forget about.
You forget, yeah.
And they come back.
Mm-hmm. Would you remove the mulch in the spring then?
Yeah,
what I was thinking. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, really with leeks, you do want to promote white as far up as possible. And so it depends on what you're using for it. And I would dig around at the top of it and see how they're looking. If they're looking like they're adapting fairly well, then you might be able to leave it on.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because with some things, we do recommend putting some mulch over the crown of plants and then removing it in the spring, because you don't want that excess soil or mulch in the crown area, other than for insulation over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Sue in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. I have a question about tree peonies.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, on a whim, I bought a tree peony, the first one I've ever purchased.
Congratulations. That's an excellent purchase.
Thank you. And it's planted in our backyard. It gets quite a bit of sun all year round. But it's sort of out in the open, surrounded by some annuals and some other perennials. Anyway, my question is, what should I do now to get it ready and protect it for over the winter? And what should I do in the spring? I just want it to survive this winter and... Well, and subsequent winters, of course.
This winter is probably the touchiest for it, but if you put it in the spring, it's had plenty of time to develop a good root system. And what we forget about up here, because we think that most plants are not hardy, because we live in an area where a lot of plants are not hardy. Peonies are cold lovers, and so they are perfectly happy this far north. And a tree peony, you treat as you would any other deciduous shrub. And so the treatment of it would be the same for over winter as any other hardy shrub. And I would say you wait until the ground freezes solid if you want to give a little bit extra protection. And just put a good 2-inch layer of mulch around the root zone. Keep it away from the stem. If it's multi-stem, all of the stems, or if it's a single stem, that single stem, make sure you allow a good couple inches of air between that and the mulch. Otherwise, you can promote rot, and you can also promote what I like to call the bed and breakfast for the rodents. And, you know, and especially if you put that on before the ground freezes solid. Once the ground freezes solid, those rodents have mainly found homes for the winter. And if you wait to put your mulch on until then, they've already found a home someplace else. So you've got a less likely opportunity for them to come in and move in and then feed all winter and sleep at the base of your lovely peony. It really, again, is perfectly hardy. The first winter, often a mulch is suggested, but subsequent winters, you don't have to worry about it at all. What I would suggest is make sure that you watch in the spring because it hasn't gone through a winter and a spring. They don't like wet feet. So if you have a situation where you've got standing water close to it, you might want to move it in the spring. As far as pruning, you can do that over winter like you would with any other deciduous shrub. Give it a little bit of shaping, but really that's all you have to do. And if it was fairly small when you purchased it, you may not even have to do any pruning on it for about 3-4 years. They will grow in partial shade, and so really full sun, it'll love you to pieces, and you should enjoy it immensely. What kind did you buy? Do you know what the color was?
Oh, geez, I'm not sure.
Do you know what color it was?
No, I'm not sure. It didn't bloom this year.
Yeah. And you might only get like 3 or 4 blooms next year, but, you know, really...
Sooner or later.
Oh, my gosh. Sooner or later, you are going to be blessed with a 3-4 foot, even some of them 5 foot high shrub that is going to give you salad plate size flowers that is going to be just spectacular.
Thank you, Sue, for calling. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe, one of our guests, the other Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison Department of Plant Pathology. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at the garden, the flower garden, the vegetable garden, the trees and shrubs, and especially diseases affecting all of those things, with our two guests, Liz Freemuth from The Garden Hoe and Brian Huddleston from the UW Department of Plant Pathology. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. John and Mequon, we talked a bit about, I believe, about what John's got to ask, but let's go there. John, hi.
Hi, Garden Talk Gurus. Thanks for taking my call. I've got just some further clarification on to your topics. Number one is the evergreen watering. Last night I watered my arborvitaes and spruces. The hose is getting a little stiff. So is there a protocol for when to stop watering, when you don't have to worry about it? And number two, I've had some black blight on my maple tree, and my dogwood has black spots on it. I'm cleaning up those leaves, but I imagine I cannot use those bagged leaves as a compost pile or anything. I should dispose of them or burn them, perhaps?
Get rid of them.
Yeah, in terms of watering, my typical recommendation for evergreens is if it's an established tree, so something that's been planted, say, on the order of 3 years or more, about an inch of water per week up till the point when we either get a significant snowfall or the ground freezes. Again, the trees will be using water quite late into the season. You want to make sure they've taken up substantial amounts so they can store that for over the winter. And usually I recommend, if you don't have a lot of ability to water, a soaker hose out near the drip line. And I know Liz mentioned getting rid of grass around trees and then mulching that area. I usually recommend out to the drip line just to remove competition for water. And then in terms of that black disease, that's the tar spot that I mentioned earlier, and that's been a real problem in many areas in the state. And year over, it looks like in the Mequon area, that's where I traditionally thought of this particular disease, but it's been moving west and north. And actually, the one that you're seeing, you're probably seeing it on a Norway maple, and there's actually an introduced species of that fungus that was brought in from Europe. So that's what we're really seeing quite commonly. Definitely, unless you're a really good hot composter yourself, I would tend to take those. If you have a municipal place that will take yard waste, I would take those there so that they can compost them properly. You could technically burn them if you wanted to, although that can put a lot of smoke in the air. That's not necessarily a good thing. You could bury them, deep bury them as well, if you wanted to do that. But I kind of like the idea of having someone really professionally compost them so that material can be recycled and reused.
And if you are a composter that does monitor your compost pile.
Right.
140 to 160, consistent internal temperature. When you're rotating things around, you want to make sure you've got cold materials getting up to that temperature, and that will take care of it. So if you are somebody that does monitor that, you can do it, but you do have to be careful, or you do reintroduce
right.
it.
And it's really a combination of that high temperature and the decay of the leaf tissue that really eliminates the pathogens. They just don't survive well in straight soil. They tend to like to be associated with plant debris.
And, you know, as far as watering on the evergreens, I cannot stress enough how important that is out in the landscape to make sure that they get that moisture right up to hard freeze. And yeah, my hose is getting a little crunchy too. And it, you know, it's kind of a pain to have to unhook it from the side of the house every night so that you're not bursting the pipes, but your trees will thank you for it. And if you take a look at what the cost of replacing a tree is, a little, you know, even if you have to sacrifice a hose or two, it's actually worth it to not have to replace them.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, John. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Gary and Rhinelander, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, this year, for the first time, I actually did some straw bale gardening.
Yep.
And I love it. I did, like, 30 bales and such. Hmm. And I planted mainly only tomatoes and some peppers. And I heard on your show about... what to do with tomato plants afterwards, and some people's tried it, and I guess you have never tried it, but basically I had a lot of green tomatoes, and I pulled the plants out of the bales, and I hung them upside down in my garage.
Yep.
And they did great with ripening, and they still are. Mm-hmm. Chocolate Tommy Toes and beefsteaks, all doing great. The only thing is that if you leave them on their ripe too long, then they start to shrivel up a little bit, like not getting enough moisture.
Oh, you need to get them off, yeah.
Yeah, you do. As soon as they're ripe, and then you take them off. And the only other recommendation I would have for people, I've done it myself, and it works absolutely great, but I tend to forget I hung them up, and then they come out, and they're like little dehydrated tomato raisins hanging out there. What you do have to make sure you look out for is that you're not running your car in the garage where they're hanging, because that gives off ethylene and it actually will rot the tomatoes as opposed to allowing them to ripen. So that's really the only proviso if you stick them in your garage.
You know, I just took mine this year and put them in a big bowl and lined them up, a batch of them up in our kitchen on the counter, and they're ripening just fine that way.
They are, and you know, there's the theory out there that when you hang them upside down, you actually get a little bit better flavor. And you know, for me, I mean, I'm better off putting them on the windowsill because I remember they're there,
as opposed to finding splats of tomato in your car.
Exactly. What can I say? I'm old and forgetful.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh man, Mike and Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
I produce my own compost by grinding up the fall leaves with a power mower. I usually get it down to a pretty fine powder. And then we put it in the bin, and then as I mow grass in the spring and early summer, I sort of dig it out and mix it in to add nitrogen to it. This year I'm going to be adding a mix of oak leaves, and I'm wondering if I should be doing any kind of conditioning because I understand the oak leaves might be a little acidic.
The acidic level on oak leaves is not enough that I would worry about it at all, especially in our area. Really, we've got such high pH all over the place.
I was going to say you want a little bit of acidity, quite frankly.
It actually will do you some good. And it works very well as you're composting it in with the rest of the leaves, especially if you're already adding nitrogen. That's going to speed up that decomposition of oak leaves, which is really a very, very tough structure. And yeah, that's why when we leave them on the ground, we will see snow mold develop under a mat of them over winter, et cetera, because it takes a very long time for them to break down. Consider it very nice brown material that you're adding in. If you start looking at what's green and what's brown, has nothing to do with color and everything to do with the breakdown of the structure. And so I don't think I'd worry about adding anything for pH to it.
And the fact that you're chopping them up with a lawnmower is going to help with the decay process because the smaller the pieces, the usually the quicker they'll decay.
Mm-hmm. Frankly, I just run my mulching mower over the leaves and leave them right on the lawn.
You have to be a little bit careful because if you have something like this tar spot organism we have, then you're leaving the pathogen in the grass and that material will not decay over the wintertime and you've got a ready source of the fungus the following spring. So you do have to be a little bit cautious about doing that.
Yeah, that I don't have that problem.
Okay.
And I've
If they're healthy leaves, I don't have any issue with that. But sometimes if you have some of the leaf diseases, you can have a problem.
And you're really adding extra nutrients to the soil. And, you know, to me, I'm not a turf person. If it's green when I mow it, I consider it good enough. And adding the leaves to it really does make it a little bit nicer and greener.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The one thing, because you're using ash leaves, I don't want to scare you, but I will mention that there is potentially a pathogen that you could bring in on ash. Verticillium is a fungus that can kill off ash trees, quite frankly, and a lot of other types of trees, maples, and a lot of our spring flowering trees. And that particular fungus has been documented to be present in the petioles of leaves. So if you've got an infected tree and the leaves are blowing into your yard, potentially you could run into a problem. If you're doing, again, the good hot composting and composting it long enough, probably you're not going to have an issue with that particular fungus. But I do like to caution folks when they're using leaves from maples or ash.
And symptom wise, if it looks healthy, you probably don't have an issue to worry about. But if you're seeing major portions of the tree
die back,
suddenly die back, generally in July, where it looks like, oh gosh, I forgot to water it. Well, generally, no. That's when it starts to rear its ugly head. But if you're not seeing that, it's not.
It should
really
be fine.
Yeah.
But I did see a lot of verticillium this year. So that's why I'm a little bit concerned. We had lots of catalpas come in with it. I've had ashes, maples. If you grow a Japanese maple, that's a very good host for this. We've had magnolias, red buds, just a variety of things that have had verticillium.
Those are all things that I've seen in the field. And in my own yard as well.
Yes, I have it in my yard too.
Vert is all over the place. It's endemic in the soil. Right. And, you know, and so we do see it periodically and it'll show up in the dieback.
But it's on redbud in my yard and they seed so well that I have a little redbud forest in my backyard. So I don't worry too much.
Doesn't matter. Dave and Donna emailed us. Last year we had beautiful baked garlic bulbs that we harvested, gave some of it away and kept some. We stored ours in a garlic pot on the kitchen counter. We found that over time the cloves basically dried up. We talked to some of the people we gave garlic to and they had the same issue. Any idea why our big, beautiful garlic ended up being useless after a couple months of storage?
Boy, I would almost say that that sounds like perhaps there wasn't enough moisture towards the end of the growing cycle, because normally you'll see them hold moisture a lot longer than that. And the only other option that you have is use it up faster, I guess. But really make sure that there's plenty
of refrigerate it.
And then you really have to watch it because it could mold fairly quickly if you're refrigerating it, depending on the moisture level. So that to me would be my guess.
I can't think of anything.
If it's just desiccating, I can't imagine that
disease. It's moisture too. We did see, although I don't think it's necessarily causing this particular problem. We did see a lot of aster yellows on garlic carrying over from 2011, I believe, was our banner year for that particular disease. And that's an internal infection. It's systemic and doesn't go away, but the bulbs will survive and they will sprout. But oftentimes they'll grow really bizarre looking plants. And then there's also what has reared its ugly head. Again, it's been around, but we haven't had a lot of problems with it until, again, recently as a nematode problem. There's something called bloat nematode, which will kind of infect the bottom of the bulbs and cause kind of a dry decay, and that one can be very problematic as well.
Jack in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm growing some ever-bearing strawberries, and until the frost killed the fruit off, they were producing real well. I'm wondering, what should I do with the leaves? Should I cut them off, just leave them, you know, dry up, or
are they healthy looking?
Oh, yeah, they're very healthy looking, yeah.
Then I don't think I'd bother with them. I, you know, really, I'm kind of the low maintenance approach on this sort of thing. Are they in a bed, container, pots? Where do you have them?
I've got them in a raised,
pump,
you know. Yeah, just because the clay soil, everything that's not raised seems to have problems with rot with, you know,
very,
we have all
very
these.
Good thing to have done in heavy clay mm-hmm. soil. The biggest problem I see on strawberries in my clinic are root and crown rots.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And so we get them up, you know, 6-8 inches high so that we can, you know, plant them up. And that's where I plant my garlic, too. So we try to use a bed as a double bed. Mm-hmm. In the fall, I put in some of the plants, you know, the extra ones, and then we plant garlic along the edges so that they're out of the ground, too, because we've had trouble with garlic. You know, we have a real wet spring. Sometimes the garlic tends to rot out, and mm-hmm. this way it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or right when they're drying up in July and August, we have a lot of rain, then sometimes the outer hull tends to, you know, start yeah. falling apart. And instead of having a nice bulb, you have all these separate cloves, which doesn't store too well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I would say just leave them alone. Right now, as long as the soil is not frozen solid and you have green on the leaves, they're still actively in photosynthesis. So unless those leaves fall off or if they start looking diseased or you're seeing some brown yuck, I would say just leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. There
okay.
you go.
And then after the ground freezes hard, then cover them with some straw?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And I would say before you do that, again, check the leaves, check the stems. If you're seeing good, healthy tissue, then you're good to go.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Jack. Thank you very much for calling. Pam wrote in on Facebook, we put grapes in this past spring. Should we mulch them or not? And with what? They are quite exposed in an open area.
I, again, go with if it is a relatively new plant, you've got a time and you've got a cost investment in that. If it's not going to hurt you to mulch, I would say go ahead and do it. But again, wait until the ground freezes solid. We get a little bit carried away with wanting to mulch everything before it's uncomfortable for us to be out there. But, you know, take a little discomfort upon yourself and encourage your plants to live. Wait until the ground freezes and then go ahead and put some good mulch on. And what to use, you know, if you've got a nice compost pile that was, you know, the temperature was hot enough to kill pathogens, you can use that. You can use soil that you've got to mound up a little bit, or just go with whatever kind of mulch you've got around and put a good couple inches on. Again, staying away from the stem. You don't want it rotted. If these are plants that are hardy for the area, you don't need to protect the stem. The stem will survive just fine.
And we have a great UW Extension publication called Growing Grapes mm-hmm. in Wisconsin.
That's an excellent
it's a
one. Yep.
Really good one. And you can get that from the Learning Store, mm-hmm. UW Extension Learning Store.
And Learn. If you really want to see how it's done, head up to Wollersheim Winery.
yeah, they do a wonderful job.
That is grape heaven.
Joyce in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I have two questions. One, I'm wondering if there's anything I can do in the fall to help prevent what I think was an onslaught of slugs this summer. We had a damp spring. I don't know if that precipitated it, but I was just overrun with them this summer.
What did your damage look like?
In many of the plants, they just seemed to eat the plant down to the nub. Even marigolds.
Okay, that's typically not a slug kind of behavior. Did you see anything happening around the edges of the leaves before, or was it just all of a sudden they were gone?
No, I didn't see. All of a sudden they were gone.
Okay, that sounds more like earwigs than it does.
Squirrels or rabbits.
Yeah, exactly.
Some sort of small animals.
If it looks like the leaves were stripped, then I would say, depending on what the conditions were, potentially earwigs. If the plants themselves were gone, then definitely something with sharper teeth rather than munchies.
Usually slugs will eat holes or small areas in the leaves.
Yeah, and you'll see it develop because slugs aren't going to move fast enough to get there to take a whole plant out quickly. Slugs move slowly, and you will see holes or you'll see a little bit of munching along the edge, but typically not that much. They actually need some leaf support to support their bodies, which are heavier. So you typically will see that more towards the interior of the leaf rather than on the outside edge.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you, Joyce, for calling.
And, you know, I have to say one of the best things you can do as anybody who's concerned about their plants, and this comes from Phil Pelletieri, if you really want to know what's going on with your plants, you have to be one of those weird people that goes out with a flashlight at 10 o'clock at night. And you got to surprise the critters on your plants. So you go out there with your beverage of choice and your flashlight, walk out there and flip the flashlight on the plants and see what scurries. Because if we're not seeing it during the day, it's something that's active at night. And so you need to surprise them and see what's going on.
There you go. Thanks, Joyce. Mary in Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi. My question concerns a maple tree. We took a large maple down that was, I believe, probably girdling because it was dying from the top down. But we also had somebody come take a look at it, and he said that it had about two diseases. I think they were some sort of a fungal disease. It was a old, I think he called it a Schwindler maple that was planted maybe 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. We want to replace the tree, and I want to know if it's safe to put a sugar maple maybe about 4 feet from where that tree was. If we dig out the stump really far down and dig out, you know, maybe like a 5 foot diameter area so the tree has as much freedom from the old roots. But I'm concerned that it might get the same fungal disease or whatever the Schwindler maple did. Yeah. Now maybe somebody suggested it already was dying because it was girdled, and that's what made it
susceptible.
Plus,
it's 40 years old.
Right. Yeah. When you were seeing the dieback in the top of the tree, was it kind of generally across the entire top of the tree, or did you see parts of the tree that were dying back?
Parts of the tree were dying back.
Okay, so it was a section that was dead. The rest of it looked pretty healthy.
You know, a couple of the not huge branches, but some of the lateral branches had been dying over the past couple of years, which I thought was just kind of normal. But then when you looked at the top, especially this summer, you realized that it was definitely dying.
Could you actually see a root wrapping around the trunk?
No, we couldn't, but it was planted right next to some junipers that had really gotten surrounded half of the tree. And we didn't really look that closely or dig down at all there to see if there was any girdling.
Yes, yeah, certainly when you take the stump out, I would check to see, you're going to be digging down a little ways, I would check to see whether you see any roots that look as though they were growing around that trunk, because that would give you a sense of whether you were dealing with girdling root, which is a common problem on maples. Unfortunately, for the diseases, we typically recommend a lab test to verify those. The one that I'm concerned about is verticillium wilt, which I mentioned earlier, but that would require a lab test to verify. So,
okay. How would I go about getting a lab test?
Do you have it? Is the tree still standing or has it been removed?
The tree's been removed. I mean, we have wood. We're going to use the wood for fire.
Yeah, excuse me. The best time to do this is when the tree is still standing and look for those branches that were dying back and a sample of those us to take a look at. You could try to send in some of the branches or some of the wood. If you've got smaller branches about an inch diameter, something of that sort, you could certainly send those in. We could try to do a test for you. It may be a little bit difficult for us to confirm one way or another. And again, I typically don't like to make visual assessments of these particular types of diseases because there are so many things that can mimic one another.
As far as like planting close to that, though, in this part of the world where we've been hit by glaciers, what's in 1 4-foot area, you take take one giant step forward and you won't have the same issue. And this does tend to stay in an area for a very long time. And so, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. So if you want to put another maple in, you do that with kind of eyes open. You will see whether within about 4 to 5 years, you will see whether that tree is going to be affected. Because typically, at least in my yard, that's what it takes. If I've got vert in an area, I pop one in. And within 4 years, I can see dieback in July. It's like, all right, take it out and put something else in somewhere else. There is a list of things that are not as susceptible that might be desirable for you to plant.
Right. So, we have a fact sheet on this particular disease, and it's called verticillium wilt. wilt on woody trees and shrubs. And you can find that at my clinic website. That's pddc.wisc.edu in the fact sheet section of the website. It's also available on our UW Extension horticulture website, which is hort.uwex.edu. And read up on that there. Then the last paragraph, there's a list of suggested trees if you do have verticillium. And, you know, you may have to make an assumption that, yes, that's what killed your tree, in which case I wouldn't recommend another maple, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I think it would be better off doing something that's on that list. Mm-hmm. And usually the safest bet are conifers.
Oh,
yeah, definitely.
Although it's a lot different from a maple.
Not different from
not a maple.
It is. And if you want that design look, you know, sometimes you really just have to take a leap of faith, too, and say, okay, I'm going to wish that it's not right here. And if you don't invest in a hugely expensive maple, you can afford to maybe lose it in 4 years. Everything is an experiment in my yard.
There you go, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. Liz Freemuth from the Garden Hole. Brian Huddleston from the UW-Madison Department of Plant Pathology, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll join us next week on Garden Talk. We'll be visiting with Kevin Shesho, who is the Ag Development Agent for Burnett, Washburn, and Sawyer Counties. He'll have some great tips for improving soil, among other things. Right now, though, taking a look at plants and plant diseases with Liz Freemuth from the Garden Hole and Brian Huddleston from the Department of Plant Pathology. Liz, you know, I haven't asked you about your business in a while. Tell us a little bit more about the Garden Hole.
I go out and help people be happier in their yard. So a lot of what I do is remediation. If something's going wrong in it with plants, they're not looking healthy, if they need to change cultural practices, I train their staff or I give them recommendations on what to do. Also recommend professionals that are excellent, the tops in their field at what they do, to come out. I am a certified arborist, but this bud does not climb trees. So if they need somebody up in an oak tree, I know who does the best work for certain diseases, et cetera, and will recommend people to go out. I do a bit of design. It's generally for people that I've had as longstanding clients because I do understand what they're looking for and what works best in the site. And I've got clients all over the place. I'll be in Florida this next year, this next winter, Georgia, Indiana. And our oldest son moved out to California for a year, so I'm going to expand the Garden Hole out on the West Coast as long as I'm out there. So,
why not?
Why not? And then in my spare time, I'm actually on the board of directors for a new botanic garden that is within the city limits of the city of Delavan. It's called Congdon Gardens. And it's a new botanic garden, and we're working on developing and growing right now. It's as sustainable as possible, and I know that's an overused word, but we're actually incorporating a lot of practices that people can use in their own yard. So it's been fun.
Have to get somebody from over there to come talk about it sometime on Garden Talk.
Well, that would be me.
All right.
That would be me. We're a little low on staff right now.
Well, Liz, that's something for another show then. We'll
absolutely. I'd love to do that.
We have, and by the way, Brian, you've been in that plant pathology, that plant diagnostic clinic for a long time.
Yeah, I hit my 15th year this July, so I've been around. I'm
but
getting up there.
You're such a young baby. I don't
yes,
see
that's
how that
right.
could
yes,
be.
Yes, that's why I'm so bald. And
but it's been fun.
I love my job. I have one of the coolest jobs on the planet. So definitely I like to talk about diseases. I do a lot of talks out in the state and just came back from Racine talking to master gardeners, and I get professional talks as well. And I should, I guess, mention, since I've, as I commented before, I've gone over to the dark side. I now have a Twitter account. And if you're interested in following me, I'm at UWPDDC. And I pretty much send out very limited number of tweets on when we have new fact sheets that are available. I do a weekly update on what diseases I've seen in the clinic. And there are certain other things that I will announce. I'm involved in a weekly teleconference where we eventually put materials up online. There's a podcast for that and a summary that's written. And I make announcements about those as well. So if you're interested, you can subscribe to my Twitter account.
I will be subscribing later.
I'm already subscribed to Liz's account.
Yeah, so. I wish I could remember what my account is, but I think it's Liz the Garden Hoe, I think. I tweet on plants and fun stuff as well, usually once a day or a few times a week, whatever I'm doing. So
there you go. There you go. Barb in Green Bay has a question for you guys. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I'll get right to it. I know there's not a lot of time left. I do lasagna gardening very successfully. I have a very small garden, and I just do tomatoes. And I tuned in late, so I don't know if you even talked about this. For the first time ever, I got, at the end of the summer, late blight. And, you know, pretty much killed everything quickly, instantly. And so I'm wondering, should I not use that garden next year for tomatoes? Should I cover it with black plastic? The type of mulching I do are my willow leaves, which work great because they're so small. And what thoughts you might have? I did get rid of all the diseased.
All the diseased plants are gone, and you're sure that it was late blight? They kind of died from the top down rather than the bottom up?
Yeah, and it was awful quick.
Yeah, very quick. That's probably late blight. Yeah, if you truly have late blight, that particular organism does not survive well in soil. There is technically a way that it could, but we're not aware that that actually happens here in Wisconsin. So you should, as long as you've cleaned up all of the old tomato debris, do not have any old tomato fruit sitting around that might stay intact over the wintertime that might be infected. As long as you've removed all that debris, roots and everything, then you should most likely be fine for next year. And then it's just a matter of making sure that you're buying good, healthy plants that are not already infected. And then the rest of it's the luck of the draw, whether or not the spores or what are called sporangia of this organism blow into your area.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
We do have a fact sheet on that. Again, I mentioned my website. We have a fact sheet on late blight for anyone who's interested that has additional recommendations for that disease.
And also cultivars to choose,
yes,
et cetera.
There are some resistant varieties for that particular disease, and those are listed in the fact sheet.
Joan in Middleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm actually calling for the lady a couple of callers ago who you talked out of having slugs. And I know I have slugs.
Okay.
I did go out with a flashlight at night, and they were successfully eating my beans right down to the ground, believe it or not.
They were. How many were on them?
There were so many on it. It was sick. I mean, it was ugly. And,
unbelievable.
Actually, now this fall, even in my radishes and such, even during the day, they're just down in the ground. When I pulled out my broccoli, there were like four or five around every stem.
Do you heavily mulch or anything?
I use a lot of leaf mulch.
Okay.
But I don't heavily mulch during the season.
Okay. One way.
It was a bad year. I've talked to a lot of other people. I know some older women who said, I pulled everything out. I was so sick of looking at slugs because they're just so ugly.
And unless you saw them, so you know what you're dealing with, which is fantastic. Now, if products that you can use that are safe around vegetables, I know that there are slug baits out there, but if you're somebody who's out in the garden every day, one thing that really works very well is diatomaceous earth.
Okay.
And it is one of the easiest things. It's just that it sifts through the soil very, very quickly, and so you have to apply it every day.
Okay.
And it's the same stuff that goes into pool filters. It's that white powdery thing.
I actually used it on some of my cool crops.
Yeah, and I will tell you, if you go to a pool store, I'm sorry, garden centers, but if you go to a pool store, you can buy a bigger box because you're going to need a lot of it if you have a lot of slugs.
And you need to do a fairly thick of it. You don't want to broadcast it. You want a nice little trail that you can kind of see.
Yeah, and how this kills them is this is very sharp sea particles, and when they go across it, it very satisfyingly rips their bellies open. For those of us who are trying to get rid of them, it's very
kind of
satisfying.
Revenge
it is.
Technique.
It's revenge. It's revenge eradication. We kind of like that.
Are they coming in from grassy areas or what?
They're coming in from shaded areas. If you've got leaf mulch, if you've got wood mulch, anything like that, oftentimes you will get them hiding and then coming out at night.
The other thing you can do is if you can, I would definitely recommend the diatomaceous earth, but the other thing you can do is sink something like a pie tin in your garden in various areas and then apply a very nice, thick, very yeasty beer.
Okay.
And they tend to be attracted to that and they'll drown in that eventually.
And you know, the key thing is that you do have to open a beer every day in order to do this. So in Wisconsin, I would suggest one of the good microbrews, but that's just me. But you do have to refresh that daily. So you want to make it so that you can remove that pan and empty it out and get rid of the slugs who drowned and died very happily.
There you go. Thank you very much, Joan. for calling. I appreciate your call. And Mike on Facebook said he had a tree he rescued and put in a pot in the yard in summer. I've grown fond of it, but now it's getting cold. The tree's 2 feet tall. What should he do? Should he, you know, he knows it's going to freeze, but should the tree be in the ground or indoors?
What kind of a tree is it? Does he say? Does he show which one is the picture?
No.
Depends on what kind of a tree it is. If it was a tree that you rescued that is hardy for this area, so if you have any kind of an idea of what the leaves look like, et cetera, you could email that to me and go to my website at www.thegardenhoe.com, and you can email a picture, and I can kind of help you walk through that. But now would be a good time to pop it in the ground, wait till it freezes solid, mulch it over if it's hardy for this area. If it isn't, and you want to move it indoors, just do that a little bit carefully. Either it's going to lose all of its leaves and it will re-leaf. If it's a tropical, don't worry about it. Most of them will survive just fine after they drop their leaves.
All right, there we go. We cover a lot of ground here in a pretty short period of time. Liz Fremont is a provider of concierge horticultural services for her business, The Garden Hoe. I believe we have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to go and take a look at that. Brian Hoddleston directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. How many thousand plants have you?
We do about a 1,000 to 2,000 a year, depends on the year.
That's a lot of plants. And over the years, you do the math on that, 15, he's probably got 30,000 plants he's taken a look at over time just in his own lab. But they're always happy to be with us, and certainly great to have you with us here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Taking a look at the fall garden today and a little look at diseases of plants and trees with our two guests, Liz Fremont, who is provider of concierge horticultural services through her business. It's called The Garden Hoe. Brian Hoddleston directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Great to have them along. Thank you so much for listening in today, and certainly join us with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can also go to my Facebook page, post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Gerald in Iola called to say that he once found a wood turtle in his garden at night, and when he picked it up, he found three slugs hanging out of its mouth. So if you're having slug trouble in your garden, try a wood turtle.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
That's a great story. Thanks, Gerald, for letting us know. Wood turtles are good. Paul in Cascade, hi, thank you for calling.
Boy, I didn't expect that quick a response.
We're good.
Yeah, I'm beginning to form that opinion myself.
What can we do for you, Paul?
Well, I have a question about a plant called Datura.
Mm-hmm.
How much of it is poisonous?
How much are you going to eat? Don't eat any of it. It actually, most of it is toxic in varying degrees.
Oh, I have no intention of eating it.
Good.
I've been on the computer, and some people say just the roots are poisonous. Others say the seed pods are poisonous. Others say don't even touch it. I'd like a little clarification.
Yeah,
touching it
should be okay.
That's a little much because, you know, really you're looking at things that are Brugmansia, which are in the same family, and those are decorative, and we use them frequently, and you see them in tropical areas. And you can touch them. I touch them. I smell them and what have you. But if somebody is allergic to the ooze that comes out of them, then potentially you can get a rash from it. But I have never seen anything that says someone is going to die from touching a Datura or a Brugmansia or anything like that. And in my book, if any part of the plant is poisonous, let's go to Yule Gibbons on this. If any part of the plant is edible, you're probably okay. If any part of the plant is poisonous, just don't put it in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And if you do have a sensitivity to other plant fluids, then you might want to be careful about broken stems, broken leaves, etc. But I do believe that the seeds are actually the most toxic out of that, but I could be wrong.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thanks, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Doug in La Crosse. Hello.
Hello. Question is, near Holman, which is sandy, loamy, mostly sandy soil, we planted a line of Techni Arts for manufacturers, for the growers' instructions, and I've planted Arts for years. As a windbreak against the highway, and between these Technis and the highway are a bunch of locust trees, or honey locust trees, the ones that have the thorns.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a dreadful tree, and these barbs are planted, say, 4 to 5 feet from the base of some of these trees, and within days, they all started to die.
And you said this, did you say this was close to a road?
Well, I would say it's 45, 50 feet from the road surface. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and was there any kind of chemical treatment done in that area in the last couple of years?
Don't know that, because the area that we were planting in has been used as a garden for the last 2 or 3 years, and or longer than that. And so I don't know of any spray in the garden area itself.
Yeah, did you say the locusts were also dying as well, or
no,
just the arbs?
No, the locusts are thriving.
Okay, so it's just the arborvitaes that were having
just
problems.
Yeah.
How much
and
do?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say. I mean, the arbs looked good. We put them in. We put them in per instructions and watered them well. We really took care of them, but mm-hmm. very quickly, two of them showed stress.
How much were you watering?
I don't know, two maybe three times a week in the heat of the summer.
Okay, now how big were the arbs that you brought in? Were they small or large?
They were a good 4 foot bush.
And container?
Yes.
Not B&B?
No.
And from a reputable grower, have you gotten plants from them before?
We bought them from Home Depot.
Okay.
Were the pots sitting out on a asphalt parking lot?
They were sitting out in the asphalt parking lot, yes.
And what color were the
like
pots?
Like all their stuff. No, the pots are black.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if maybe you didn't get some that had some root damage from heat and lack of water. Oftentimes big box, and I'm not going to point finger at Home Depot or Lowe's or any of the, you know, in particular, but when they bring them in, they are taken care of as people have time, basically. You know, some stores are a little bit better than others, but you can actually get enough root death that you're not going to get them to come back, and there may be enough life left in them so that they look good when you purchase them, get them out, and you don't have any new roots to develop because there isn't anything to develop. But without actually taking a look at the site and knowing the history of the site, I tend to worry about things that were put on the ground as well. And about the only thing you can do is to send, is do you have the trees there yet, or are they, did you get rid of them?
We returned them.
Okay, and how about the ones that you got? Are they? Did you replace them with arbs?
We did not.
Okay, what did you?
I've never had a die-off like this. I thought, well, I'm not going to do this again. So we took soil samples and we sent them off to the university.
And did you get any kind of a result on that?
We just did that.
Okay, and nothing else has gone into that area?
Not as there is a garden. There was a garden planted this year. Not as close to those arbs, and in my opinion, it wasn't a great garden. I mean, some of the things did okay, and some of them weren't that great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just don't know.
Yeah, and I would have to say, without actually looking at what the death looked like, you know, and people think it's odd that I say I do actually put things into my yard to see how they die, and there is a reason for that. Is different. Different things affecting plants will actually show differently on the plant when it's out in the field. And so without really seeing what the needles look like or having it sent up to the lab for a test to see if you're pulling up any pathogens on the needles, it's hard to say. If you look at it or if you took pictures of it, Oftentimes, that's a little bit easier to pinpoint exactly where some of that is coming from. But in this instance, you know, if we don't know what was on the soil, if anything had been applied, and there wasn't any roots taken to sample or even for us to look at, and I can't see what the needles look like as they're desiccating, I'm going to have to do a shrug and pass this, you know, I'm going to tag team this one to Brian and go, there's like about four or five things I can think of, but I can't pinpoint it any further right. than that.
Definitely several things could be going on, but I am a little bit concerned if it was really hot and those plants were in black pots on plastic or on asphalt, that the roots may have heated up. There may have been some damage.
Basically cooked.
Right. And then you planted them in a sandy site. You said that your soil was pretty sandy. And even though you're watering, they may not have been getting enough, just not getting enough water because they were on a sandy soil, didn't have a great root system to begin with.
Mm-hmm. No, there you go. Thanks for calling, Doug. Appreciate your call very much. I want to mention Lynn in Monona, who I think has a good question here. Well, I know she does. Could you please
all
explain
of your gardeners
the,
do.
Yeah, could you please explain the timing of mulch? You talk about not putting mulch down until the ground freezes, but I thought having mulch down year-round in our beds was good practice for keeping moisture in the soil and seed germination down. Should I pull mulch back from the plants at some time during the year and then reposition it when the ground freezes? I'm confused.
Well, this is going to be even more confusing. It depends.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to leave it at that. We'll just say it depends on what it is that you're trying to protect and why you're trying to protect it. Yes, having mulch down is a fantastic thing to moderate soil temperature and soil moisture. It's been proven in the arbor industry testing that's been done that it really doesn't actually over time improve or increase the amount of moisture that's in the root zone, but what it does is it moderates. And that's what we're looking for in most of what we're doing is moderation so that the trees, the shrubs, the flowers, et cetera, don't have to respond physically to those extremes of one end or the other. So mulch is a good reason for that. It also helps keep weeds down. And for those of us that like pretty, it looks pretty when you put it around stuff. So all of those are good reasons. Why do I say right now to not put it down until the ground freezes solid? Because we're in that point where you want the plant to freeze, but you don't want to encourage rodents to move in. So normally I would say, go ahead and throw some mulch down. You know, it's fantastic. Keep it away from the stems that need to be above ground and need to be out of moisture. But right now we're looking at, are we going to lose things over winter because the rodents move in? And that's really where it gets to be this time period where you say, just hold off until it freezes solid, the rodents are in their homes, then put the mulch down. It's not that you're trying to prevent things from freezing, you're just trying to moderate what happens when they're doing what they need to do, given the conditions that we have. Things that you want to pull mulch away from, you're just trying to give a little bit more protection over a first winter or two, or if it's moderately hardy. Roses, oftentimes the rose people will say mounded up a foot, and that's to protect generally that grafting union that can be a little bit touchy when our temperatures dip down to minus 40 periodically. So really it's just, you know, a lot of plants may survive, but you want to give that little bit of added protection. Generally speaking, most plants, and again, we say generally there's an exception to everything, generally most plants will benefit from having that buffering layer of mulch around them, whether that's in other plant materials or whether that's in a mulch that's applied. Timing just depends on a lot of other variables in the growing.
Yeah, I was going to say, oftentimes at this time of the year when we're applying mulch, it's as more of an insulating sort of thing for the winter for crowns that might be sensitive, or roses where you mentioned the graft union, where when you're doing a lot of application of mulch during the summer, it's oftentimes that modification or moderation of moisture in the soil, which is the important thing that you're trying to do at that point.
And, you know, with things like roses, when you're looking at protecting the graft union, it's that insulating, but it's an insulating at key times of the year when you're getting freeze-thaw, which plants don't respond extremely well to. So you're trying to moderate what's going on so that you're not getting those huge extremes.
Carl in Brookfield, it is your turn. Thanks for calling, Carl. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. I love the show. I've noticed on a lot of oak trees, and some maples in particular, all the way from St. Germain all the way down to Brookfield, something that looks like anthracnose, but it also kind of resembles bacterial leaf scorch. later in the season, and I've noticed it pretty much, you know, like I said, from St. Germain all the way down to Brookfield. I was wondering, later in the season, do you know what that could be?
What sort of symptoms exactly are you seeing on these trees?
Well, it's yellowing to the mid-vein, kind of dieback on the leaves. The leaves don't curl and brown as much as they're yellow and kind of have water-soaked areas.
Okay, but, is it primarily in between the veins that you've been seeing this? Do the veins stay pretty intact?
The veins stay pretty intact.
Yeah.
Similar to if you've ever seen, well, when you see bacterial leaf scorch on something like a buckeye or something like that, or a horse chestnut.
Yeah.
It's got that look to it.
My thought on something like oaks would be if you're seeing a lot of yellowing and or browning between the veins, but the veins stay relatively intact, that it could be something called chlorosis. This is a pH-induced iron deficiency in the plant, and oftentimes we see this associated with really high soil pH values, and the iron just gets locked into the soil, and the trees can't take it up.
Now, are you seeing that yellowing before it develops spots that look water-soaked, or do the spots actually show up as the leaf, as the tissue is yellowing?
Well, I've normally seen anthracnose in spring.
Right.
This is, say, after the middle of July or so, so later in the season, and sporadic. I mean, sporadically located throughout the plant.
Okay. There is another late season disease that's similar to anthracnose called Tubacchia leaf spot. Mm-hmm. That could be something that you're seeing as well. Probably the best thing, if you're really interested in figuring out what this is, would be to get a sample in whenever you see it next year. Get it into my clinic so we can do a formal diagnosis on it, because the symptoms that you're talking about, it may be a combination of things that you're
dealing with rather than a single problem. That's kind of what I was thinking,
and
too.
And probably what's going on in the maples is not the same as what's going on in the oak trees.
Yep.
Oh, all right.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Thank you for calling. And Ben in Madison. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you, Larry. I got a couple of questions here. I collect seeds and spread them, and so I've got hollyhocks that have come up after a couple of years, and I love the hollyhocks. But I'm getting these kind of reddish-brown spots all over them.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so I just take out the leaves and move them out. But in fact, I still have this brilliant red one that's still flowering here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, you know, what to do about that. And I have a couple other questions if you want me to throw them all out.
Let's go with the hollyhock first. It's kind of bumps on the leaves. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and they're kind of like that brownish. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a rust disease. Rusts are a very large group of fungi, and there are specific rusts that infect different types of plants. And there's this hollyhock rust, which is very, very common. A good fall cleanup is something that you can certainly try to help lessen the amount of disease that you will see. Probably won't totally take care of the problem, because this will survive very easily in little bits of old plant debris in the soil, and the fungus will produce additional spores during the growing season that will continue to infect the plants. Sometimes with this disease, it's either an option of not growing hollyhocks, but it sounds like you really like them, or if you want plants that will look really nice, probably coming in with some sort of preventative fungicide treatment during the growing season before you see symptoms.
Okay. What kind of fun, you know, you can get a Young's or something?
Yeah, I would check at a local garden center. Look for something that's listed for use on herbaceous perennials or herbaceous plants, and then look for something. You may want to try to see if you can find something that's specific for rust diseases. You may or may not be able to find that. Again, if you're interested, if you go to my clinic website, I don't remember the actual active ingredients off of the top of my head for that particular disease, but there's a contact page on my website. You could send me an email, and I could check on active ingredients that you could look for. But sometimes that's the best option.
Your web ad, your address afterwards?
Yeah, it's PDDC.
PBDC.
Yeah, two Ds in there. Dot WISC, short for Wisconsin, dot EDU.
Okay.
And along the side, there's
PDDC,
a little...
PDDC,
wisc.edu. And then there's a little box that's contact us, and you can send me an email, and I can double check for you. That's a disease I don't recommend fungicides for routinely, and so I've got to check to see what's labeled. I can't remember all of this stuff anymore.
Yeah. They come up next to my black walnut. That's my next question, is I got a bumper crop of black walnuts, and this year I'm going to try to outsmart the squirrels and then take the husk out and just jump in, up and down and try to get them out and then save them on newspapers in the basement or something.
Sure.
Because I love black walnut hickory cake.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to make us some and bring it into the studio at any time, please.
Anytime. Yeah, I know Larry would love that.
Yeah.
So, so they grow, the hollyhocks grow on that, and I like them because of that. Mm-hmm. The other question I have, I retired, so I want to get into making fall arrangements and make them, look aesthetically pleasing and not just a bunch of collected weeds or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there's any like books or brochures or what you would recommend.
Oh, boy. No. Not that I know of.
And I don't know. I'm not familiar with that either.
Not that I know of offhand. When you start looking at what to plant, first and foremost, if you've got black walnuts, you need to access a decent list for what grows under black walnuts. You might be limited as far as that goes. Then I would say even just the basics of, go to the library or look online for the basics of designing with flowers. And, there may even be, if you're retired, there may even be a class, adult education class that you can take for that. You want stuff from your own yard, again, access a good list on black walnut stuff.
I think Olbrich Botanical Gardens actually puts on some of those shows.
And they do a fantastic job of that. So that I would suggest, definitely.
Actually, we're members there, and we get that. We get quite a few notifications on classes. That'd be worth maybe joining up or at least going over and looking.
I think so, because I would think that Olbrich would be using stuff out of the gardens, too, that they could do a class.
And I'm bringing that up because Ben is from Madison. So
I was going to say maybe call Lisa Johnson at Dane County Extension and see if she has any ideas as well. I don't know if she does any of that or not, but she might be a good contact. And her phone number is 224-3715.
224-3715. All right. There we go. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate the call. And, boy, we're fast running out of time here. Pedro in Fond du Lac wonders if he has a birch tree, he had to cut it down because of birch borer. Does he need to worry about that borer in his wood floors if he brings the birch in the house for firewood?
With anything that you've got borers in, cover it with heavy mill black plastic in the sun to kill everything out, and then once it sits for a little bit, I really can't imagine you're going to have an issue with the floor, but I would not store fresh stuff you cut and then bring in the house. I wouldn't store it in the house until you've had a chance for it to sit under plastic.
A little bit. Okay.
Yeah. Heat up. You want to do at least like 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the size of the wood pile, and make sure that it's covered, et cetera.
I gotta believe I have the birch borers would have a hard time with
flooring.
And going through any kind of covering on it, et cetera. But if you are concerned about it and you want to be safe,
that's what to do.
Exactly.
I think it would be more of a nuisance than a danger to the flooring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Liz, Brian, always a pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Sure, we love it.
So much fun. Excellent gardeners that call in.
Oh, absolutely. Liz Freemuth is the garden ho. That's her business. And Brian Huddleston is with and directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. They will be back, and definitely we'll have them on again. I hope you'll join us next week on Garden Talk. As I mentioned earlier, Kevin Shesho, who is the Ag Development Agent for Burnett, Washburn, and Sawyer Counties, will be our guest. He's got some great tips for improving soil, among other things. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.